Oh,
Oh,
hello. Sorry,
hello.
you caught me dabbing my elbow because I crashed on a lime scooter on the weekend, very drunk, and now it's
Oh my
bleeding.
God.
But anyway, so irrelevant. Hello, Elliot.
Hi.
Thank you so much for doing this interview. Mainly because one, it's a pleasure to talk to you both, but to do an interview about porn is alien to me, and so bizarre. So I'd just like to ask, really, to kick this off, where on earth did this come from? How did this idea come to life?
Well, it's so funny because you talk about it being alien to you. For me and Chris now, especially this week, it's like, God, someone shut us up about porn. But I
Right.
think we just talked about it a lot in our personal life and we're like, why does no one else talk about this? And surely we need to have more conversations about it because it's massive.
Eli and I both obviously grew up in Christchurch, both grew up in the closet and came out to each other, like later in life. But still young in our 20s. We're only 16 now, but
Yeah.
when we sort of started catching up about like all the stuff we have in common, porn was this like interesting moment, point of like connection, a topic of connection, because like for us, it is how we worked out our sexuality, or helped us work out our sexuality. So I did think it was like a bit of a interesting subject matter. And then from there, we also realized we had so many blind spots in terms of this topic. And so thus the porn revolution began.
There's one really interesting quote from you, Chris, that you say the porn you watched was just really happy gay porn stars who knew what they were doing. And as a gay man who also grew up in Christchurch and went to Catholic school, my entire education about sex came from porn. Now, having done everything you've done, do you still see porn as being like an educational tool?
Well, I think it's interesting to highlight, and something that we have learned and now can articulate better is that like porn isn't sex education, but I do think it is like part of the conversation around sexuality and sex. And what was the second part of that question? I've sort of lost my train of thought.
Well, it's sort of like porn fill ends up filling gaps in sex education rather than being sex education itself. It's like because we're not having conversations like hopefully we're having on this show, people end up seeking stuff out for themselves.
I think as well, a big part of it is that oh my God, my brain has stopped working.
It's all
Wait,
the
hang on. I
porn.
had a really good train of thought there and I've just lost it. We're obviously great for you can cut this out. Wait, what was I trying to
Oh,
say?
maybe I'll keep, it's human, you know? No,
Yeah.
people,
Oh,
yeah.
anyway, it'll come back. My brain has
Okay,
fallen.
okay. I'll move on. Like, has this whole journey like changed your perspective on porn? Because obviously you're naturally like quite porn positive people. Are you still that?
I now know what I'm going to say. What I'm trying to say.
Okay.
It's about, but this also links into what you just asked as well, where it's really what we're trying to strive for is like, because it's not there's not like a solid answer whether porn is good or bad, but we're trying to make ourselves more conscious about what we are viewing and become more like conscious for porn users. We're not saying like that means X amount of clips a week or
Or the only this genre, or
exactly, but we're saying that if we start to have these conversations with each other, we can start looking at our own behavior around porn and then start to make choices that align with our values around that. And so I think in terms of the question before and also that question there, I think that sort of applies still, where it's like, I don't think my relationship with porn has changed since the series has been made, and that I am more conscious about it and I'm asking myself bigger questions. I wouldn't say like my value towards it has changed though.
I feel like we did come into this hoping that at the end we would have this like clear answer of like this is how everything should be, and we definitely don't. Like obviously the last episode isn't out yet, but I mean, we have come up with some answers, but not the answer. I feel like I've made some changes. I never use incognito mode anymore. I've just been like, you know what? No one's gonna hunt down my computer and care about what porn I like. A SWAT team's not gonna come into my house and be like, what would you be looking at?
But isn't it interesting because like the fact that even incognito mode is still a thing for adults is like this reference of, or this idea that it is still like a sinful, shameful act. And I think a little part of that, and I talk about this in the first episode, I was confusing that with my own sexuality in a way, that I was still bringing that same judgment and shame around the porn I was wanting to watch to like my own personal identity as like an out gay man. Even though I was like 31 and so confident in myself, I still kind of felt like being intimate was this naughty thing that should be in incognito mode. Not that we say like do it in the streets, but it's like, yeah, there's a personal shame to it that we need to address.
Yeah, it's like you should do it in private, but you also don't have to hide it.
And hide it from yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
And speaking of doing it in the streets, I just wonder, after this whole journey, would you jerk off in a porn cinema? Are you open to that concept now?
For me, that's not my, like, what I'm into. But I do understand that people are into it. But that's just like, again, this is what I'm, from my experience anyway, like I don't think my taste has shifted from doing this series, but I'm more aware of like why I'm into stuff or like what I'm into because of having a look at it.
We had some flips, like, I remember like early on in the process, we were like, a porn cinema, isn't that great? Because then people had to go out, they had to buy a ticket. It was such a conscious thing to go and watch porn. Bring back the porn cinema. And then we were like, oh no, maybe they shouldn't be on the main street of town, like that happening in front of everyone either. And the classic, which was the original porn cinema, is like literally next to a Sunday school.
So I do think it's interesting as like, because we feel like we're these like radical sexperts who are like, bringing porn out into the public and like people don't want to talk about it and it's like everywhere, we're like bringing it into areas where it shouldn't be seen, but there were literal porn cinemas with like adult movies playing like on public roads
everywhere.
So it's like, it's not a new thing that it's around. It's been around before we were doing this, in a more public way.
Oh, that is actually really weird to think when you pause for a second, because you do kind of think of it as a new thing almost.
Yeah, well, like the advent of the internet, it is a new thing in terms of its prevalence in society and our access to it, right? Like,
what, porn?
Well, yeah, in terms of internet porn is like,
I think the game has changed so much.
Yeah, right.
But I think what's something, after talking about it even like this week, now that the show is launching, one thing that I think is being highlighted to me is that the curiosity to see porn or to understand sexuality or sex, because there are gaps in sex education or whatever that we have when we're young, is still on us today. And also is in our young people and is in us, and it's what connects us all together. So there's always going to be this want or desire to see something, but now that has changed because we used to be held back because of bandwidth or
dial-up internet
access, whereas now
a family computer,
it's totally accessible. So I feel like, you know, for concerned adults who are like, we don't want to be introducing our series to kids, I would ask them to think like, well, when you were that age, did you want to see it?
Yeah.
And if the answer is yes, it's like, well, that same desire is in our young people, but now when they want to see it, they can.
So when I kind of like hear of the concept of this show, I think, okay, you'll probably talk to some people who watch it, you'll probably talk to some porn stars, maybe some sex workers, but did this whole journey like take you to a lot of places you sort of didn't expect?
It took us to Wellington.
Yeah.
We talked to the classifications office, we talked to people who are working in this area around like you know, education, and then we talked to a bunch of OnlyFans creators.
We talked to a woman who directed New Zealand's only full-length gay porn, who's a cisgender woman,
and we talked to our friends. Cool. I think that was like a real highlight as well, because it is such an independent, personal journey to be able to share that with people that you've known your whole life and discuss this conversation with them is like quite fun and exciting.
Yeah.
It's a really fun conversation once you get yourself into it.
Yeah.
But also have to set your own parameters about like what you want to talk about.
You don't have to have the conversation. It's not mandatory.
No. But
it's not going through your history. Like it's interesting you mention that because when I was watching it last night, preparing for this interview, my friend was on the couch. And I was just like, how much porn do you watch? Just out of curiosity. And it became this really friendly, interesting conversation. And it's like once you get that ball going, like it's just breaching that gap, then you kind of feel like quite open to talk about a lot of it.
It is interesting, isn't it? Well, classifications office talk about cooling the temperature of these conversations so they don't have to feel like really heavy, tense subjects. And that, I think that's part of the process of becoming a more conscious porn consumer is like by verbalizing your habits or your behaviors or your attitudes, you're beginning to reconcile with them as well.
It's such a, everyone's got such an isolated relationship to it as well that like just as soon as you start talking about it, you're like, oh, phew. I'm not the only one. You know, it's like not the same thing as us coming out to each other in our 20s and being like, oh my gosh, for all those years. And also like even in the porn conversation, that was like, we were literally going to the same websites at the same age.
And at the same time.
And at the same time, we synced up completely on the blood moon.
it's so weird because the person I was having this conversation with is also called Liam. He's also gay. We've been, you know, best friends since we were, you know, kids. And it did take years of friendship to come out to each other. And then even more years to talk about porn. Do you think like sexualities have different experiences of porn?
I definitely think like there's a really interesting, I think there's a very different series that could be made by like two women, which I would totally love to see. It's just so that this version of this series is by two gay men. And I think because of that, there's a really interesting kind of queer lens that's placed on it.
Yeah.
That I think is fascinating because I do think the relationship between queer people and pornography is an important one because we're not seeing intimacy like we want to see in media or whatever growing up. We were seeing it in porn. It's how we, it was literally a tool for me.
Yeah, definitely. I don't know how long it would have taken me to figure it out if I didn't have porn.
20 more years.
Yeah,
I wonder. That leads me kind of to my big question, and I do not expect a straight answer on this, but like if you had to summarize it how you could, do you think the internet has helped or hindered pornography?
God.
I don't know. I've got an annoying answer, which is that it just has changed it in a way that makes these conversations vital. Because there's so much of it and it's so accessible. And I think what it used to be, you know, like you had to sort of hunt for it. I guess in a way, I think it has, no, like this whole conversation, there's like yes and no to everything. Because in a way, it has hindered it because, say, MindGeek, this massive corporation that own all those websites, have exploited so many sex workers. But then also you've got something like the invention of OnlyFans, which has put the power back into the sex workers' hands. So I don't know.
I just think everything on the internet is as bad as it is good. Because the internet was meant to be an information sharing tool, right? But now we've realized it's been just as good at sharing misinformation. It's fucked us up even more as much as it's helped us, you know? So everything the internet's given us, that's good. It's also given us the exact opposite. And regardless, it's here.
Porn's here to stay.
It's here. Just to finish this interview, I do want to show you something because I never get to brag about it. Well, I shouldn't brag about it, but never get to bring it up. And just for context, I was the editor of the university magazine at the University of Canterbury. And I, to like get, you know, some attention for the magazine last year, I proposed a communal OnlyFans where everyone could have the password and like just post stuff. And I made the front page of the press. Here I am. Oh. So, and it's full of quotes. It was all a publicity stunt. I didn't intend to do it, but it's full of quotes such as, you know, to demystify porn and stop body shaming and was inclusive.
Oh, you were doing this before we were doing this. You should have made a series.
Yeah, I mean, not as well, all with NZ On Air funding, but yeah, I just... I felt like I could show someone that finally.
That's really cool. That's awesome.
So thank you for giving me an excuse to bring that up. A year and a half after. I do think it
shows that like the conversation is happening. You know, like we just so happened to be like, "Oh, this would be a good idea." But I think the fact that we had that idea, or you've also had that idea, shows that like. This conversation was going to inevitably happen at some point. And so we're just, yeah, we're grateful to be able to have the opportunity to do it so in-depthly, I guess, with so much support.
I do actually want to ask one more thing. And is, can you talk to your campaign going forward and kind of what that's going to be about?
Well, we have the last episode, which will drop on Saturday. We'll reveal the last.
Oh, okay.
We'll release. Okay. We'll announce our campaign slogan.
And it's the launch. That event is the launch of the campaign. The
launch of the campaign. We made fridge magnets.
Yeah.
And what else have we done? And I think what's exciting is that the spin-off, who are also launching our series, are doing Porn Week as well, which has been sponsored by
NetSafe.
NetSafe, who are also doing like Porn Week stuff and releasing all this. Information. So I feel like it's all part of what this campaign has been about.
And some of those articles actually on Porn Week on the spin-off are fantastic. And I highly recommend everyone go read those. Eli, Chris, thank you so much for letting me interview you today. It's much appreciated, everything you're doing. And it's so cool. And I, you know, it's better late than never, I guess, really. So have a wonderful, wonderful day, both of you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Liam.